A well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Welcome to another edition of Bearing Arms, Cam and Company. I'm glad you're with me on the program today. We're going to be talking with the Bill Sack from the Second Amendment Foundation. They are expanding a lawsuit originally filed against the Fort Lee, New Jersey Police Department. They now have some new defendants and some new plaintiffs as well. They're challenging the Bergen County Prosecutor's Office, Township of, Paramus, New Jersey, and one other township in North Jersey as well, over the gun confiscation policy that is in place at the Bergen County Prosecutor's Office. And this is unbelievable. As I started reading some of the details about what these plaintiffs went through, it is amazing to me. Now, New Jersey, there's very little that surprises me in New Jersey. But this policy is so egregious that I honestly can't believe that no municipal attorney has warned the prosecutor's office and the police department that you got to change this, because you're going to get us in a lot of trouble. We're going to talk about the details of this again with Second Amendment Foundation's Bill Sack. Take a look and a listen. Bill, thanks so much for your time today. It's good talking with you, sir.
Yeah, happy to be here.
This is just an outrageous case. And I got more ticked off the deeper I read into this amended complaint. So this case was bad enough when SAF originally stepped in. You had a guy whose wife was she was 7 weeks pregnant. She was taken to a local hospital for a mental health evaluation. They determined that she was not a threat to herself or anybody else. And yet her husband's legally owned firearms that she did not have access to were still confiscated from him. And it took months for this individual to get his gun back. So that was the initial complaint. SAF just amended this complaint. You've got two more plaintiffs. You've got a couple more defendants now. So my first question is, how did you learn about these additional cases in Bergen County?
Yeah. So, I mean, the facts underlying the original complaint, Mr. Aliage's case, is actually even worse than you laid it out. And we can talk about that in a minute. But after we filed the initial case, which was just on behalf of the one individual, Mr. Aliage, a whole gang of people started coming out of the woodwork in Bergen County, New Jersey, and saying, oh my God, this is the same thing happened to me. We even heard from some local attorneys in the area that said, I have had multiple clients that have had this problem. So it became very clear to us right away that this was a systemic issue. That there was clearly like a pattern and practice going on here in Bergen County. And it wasn't just a one-off, you know, rogue instance that happened to Mr. Aliage, but this is something that was happening to folks all over the place.
Okay. And so, yeah, so as you determine and as you lay out, there is a confiscation policy from the Bergen County Prosecutor's Office that all of these police departments in Bergen County are following. And I mean, essentially, Bill, if it doesn't have to be you. I mean, it can be a family member. But if any family member at any point has a mental health evaluation, there's some, you know, concern, whether that concern is accurate or not, that person may be suicidal. They can spend as little as a few hours in a hospital emergency room, right? That alone can result in lawfully possessed firearms being confiscated. It can result in your permit to purchase or your firearms ID card being revoked years down the line, right?
Yeah. So, you know, I want to be really clear here that what this case is about is not individuals that themselves have been subject to a mental health evaluation or any other sort of police interaction, but their family members have. So what has been going on in Bergen County is when they determine that someone that you live with might be a prohibited person, they show up and take your guns away and then move to take your permits away as well. So it is simply not the case under the Constitution that if you live with someone who's a prohibited person or otherwise not allowed to own firearms, let's say because they're a minor, for example, that your rights are then extinguished under the law. And that is essentially the policy that Bergen County Prosecutor's Office and a number of police departments kind of under its umbrella have been enforcing against people there. If they find out that one of your cohabitants, a family member, a spouse, a child, gets themselves even in the appearance of some sort of trouble or something that could be prohibiting, they show up at your door, take your stuff away, and then seek to revoke your FPIC card, your carry permit. And it's a big problem.
It is a huge problem. Yeah. I mean, one of the cases that you guys outline, I'm just going off of memory here, but there was a young girl in high school. She and her boyfriend broke up. She was, you know, upset about it. She had made a comment about, you know, something about, I don't know how I'm going to live. I don't know what I'm going to do with my life. Anyway, she gets taken to the emergency room. I think she's there for about 6 hours. She talks to doctors. They quickly realize that, okay, she's emotional, but she's not suicidal. They release her back to her family. And I think it was almost three years later, her dad applies for his permit to purchase a handgun, is denied because of what happened with his daughter 3 years ago. And then when he points out, hey, you guys issued me a firearms ID card like 8 or 9 months ago, they moved to revoke that permit too, that they had issued years after this incident. I mean, so there's no rhyme or reason to this, Bill.
No, there's absolutely no rhyme or reason to it. And most importantly, it's not only unconstitutional, but it's completely lawless. Like, it is completely unmoored from even a wisp of even New Jersey state law. When pressed initially before we filed the case, the Bergen County Prosecutor's Office and the police department, they didn't even know what statutes they were relying upon to have confiscated these guns and then kept them indefinitely. They just essentially said, because we want to. And as you and I both know, that is all too common in New Jersey, but it's not going to stand, not if we have anything to say about it. So yeah. It's a really interesting case. We think we're on really strong legal footing here. And we were really thankful for Mr. Horonich and Mr. De La Cruz, who just joined the case with us. And we're looking forward to kind of sticking it to Bergen County here.
I think even the prosecutor's office knows you're on pretty solid legal ground, because with Mr. De La Cruz, he had been fighting for months to get his firearms returned, I believe, right? Or maybe it was his permit reinstated. And then just before he was added to your lawsuit, the prosecutor's office reached out and said, okay, hey, listen, we'll give you your guns back. We just need you to sign this release that says, you know, we didn't do anything wrong here. And we can just settle this, right? You don't do that if you're thinking that you're on solid legal ground, right? That is a cover your ass move on the part of the prosecutor's office. I'm glad to see that Mr. De La Cruz did not sign that piece of paper and instead signed up to be a plaintiff in this case. How far along did this lawsuit get before this complaint was amended? Did the prosecutor's office respond at all? Did they try to justify themselves under any kind of New Jersey statute?
Yeah, so the case has been around for a little while. If I remember correctly, we filed in November of last year.
Okay.
When we initially filed the case with Mr. Aliage as the sole plaintiff, his firearms were still in the possession of the Fort Lee Police Department. And so when we initially filed, we also filed a motion for a preliminary injunction for him to get his stuff back. Because our first concern with any of our clients who have been disarmed is that they get their guns back so they can go back to protecting themselves and their family, right? Yeah. That's first and foremost. And in the process of the preliminary injunction being litigated, the Fort Lee Police Department decided that they were going to voluntarily give him his guns back. Just so happens they changed their mind about indefinitely holding his guns after the federal lawsuit was filed. Imagine that, Cam. And so along with that, the need for the preliminary injunction kind of evaporated. We took a step back. There had been some back and forth about, you know, a potential agreement in this case that ended up not materializing. And so we're kind of back at square one in terms of filing this amended complaint, showing the court that, look, this is not just a one-off problem. This is a systemic problem that has been ongoing for a number of years and comes from the top at the Bergen County Prosecutor's Office and then filters down to these local police departments that have now been added to the case. And that this is really a problem that needs to be addressed before it's done to more people, because the facts are really clear that this is a standing policy that has perpetuated the entire county.
I'm curious. I mean, as this case has gotten attention, and going back again to the initial complaint that was filed, is there any indication at this point that other counties in New Jersey are following a similar policy?
So we're certainly on the lookout for that. Okay. At the moment, I don't have any specific evidence. You know, we're always looking for plaintiffs, right? Like if we become aware of any specific individuals that have had this happen to them, where they have been disarmed because someone that they live with either becomes a prohibited person or even potentially becomes prohibited, or for some other reason that has nothing to do with their own legal status, we would encourage them to reach out to us. We have file a case, or there's some sort of web form that we have on our website that you can go to, or submit a case, that's what it's called, where you can let us know, you know, if you've been affected. We would love to hear about it. But for the moment, we're unaware of any other specific county where this has been going on, this specific issue. But by all means, if we become aware of it, I'd be thrilled to add some new defendants, because if this is happening in one county in New Jersey, odds are it's coming from somewhere else, whether it's the attorney general's office or otherwise. But bad ideas in New Jersey spread like wildfire. So, right. If we find out about anything else, we'd love to sue on that, too.
Okay. Well, listen, Bill, I appreciate you joining us on the program today. And what is the next step in this lawsuit? Now that the amended complaint has been filed, I'm guessing the Bergen County Prosecutor's Office, Paramus, Rochelle Park, they'll have the opportunity to respond. That's the next step here.
Yeah. So, right. Next step is they'll have an opportunity to respond either by filing an answer or filing a motion to dismiss, although good luck with that. And then at that point, we'll get a scheduling order in place and figure out some limited discovery, although I don't think there needs to be very much here. I think the facts in the case are all pretty clear. So our goal is to kind of march forthwith as fast as we can towards dispositive motions, get a motion for summary judgment in, and get this thing dealt with.
All right. Well, we will be following very closely what's going on, but appreciate to SAF for stepping in and trying to right this wrong. Bill, thanks so much for joining me on the program today. Look forward to talking to you again soon.
You bet. Thanks for having us.
My thanks to Bill for joining us on the program. Again, just unbelievable to me that a prosecutor's office would be doing this. You'd think you know the law, but I guess maybe not in Bergen County. And I know this part of New Jersey as well as I know any part of New Jersey. My dad actually lived in Paramus for a number of years. So when I saw that Paramus was part of the complaint, I was... I've never dealt with the Paramus government, but let's say I was disappointed to see that this was going on in North Jersey. All right, on to today's Armed Citizen story, our good deed of the day, and our recidivist report. We will start there. Maybe not a recidivist report, but it is a head scratcher of a sentence for sure. Here's the headline: Teen gets probation for Halloween shooting in Cedar Rapids. Now, I mean, think about all of the headlines that we see. We got to do something about youth violence. We got to do something about gun violence, right? We got to take these things seriously. And then you get this story. This is from KCRG. A 16-year-old will serve 4 years of probation for a trick-or-treat shooting last Halloween in Cedar Rapids. This kid, by the way, was charged as an adult. And we know that because they're using his name. Gerald Vance of Cedar Rapids was given probation on Tuesday after he pleaded guilty to felony charges of intimidation with a dangerous weapon and willful injury causing bodily injury. Okay. Shooting happened near an elementary school on Halloween, again, last October 31st. Cedar Rapids police say that Vance was in an argument on the street with several other people when he pulled out a revolver and fired at them. One woman was hit in the back after one of the bullets ricocheted. There does not appear, based on what I've seen, I went back and I tried to look at previous news reports. No real indication that this could have been an act of self-defense by somebody who, you know, not legally allowed to possess a firearm, but still acted to defend their life. As far as I can tell, no allegations of self-defense, at least a valid act of self-defense on the part of police. His brother, Gregory Vance, also was charged in the incident. He ended up taking a plea deal last month for supplying the gun that was used in the shooting. He will be sentenced coming up here in a couple of weeks. The state is recommending 3 years of probation alone for supplying a 16-year-old with a handgun. So, again, we get all of these headlines about how we have to take these incidents seriously, right? Juvenile gun violence is a huge problem. And I honestly, I don't disagree. I would say it's violent crime, not gun violence. But juvenile crime is a huge problem. And one of the reasons why it is a huge problem is because we don't take it seriously. And so you've got this 16-year-old who ended up hurting somebody. Right? It's not just he was illegally carrying a gun, not just that he whipped it out in an argument, not just that he fired at people. He hurt someone. Thankfully, she wasn't killed. Thankfully, nobody else was wounded. But this wasn't just a prank. This wasn't some, you know, harmless act. He's arrested, he's charged, and ultimately the state says, we're okay with a slap on the wrist. We're okay with that. Oh, and the brother who supplied the gun to him. Yeah, we're okay with a slap on the wrist there too. In fact, we're not even worried about a prison sentence being stayed. We don't think any prison sentence should be involved here. The 16-year-old who actually shot somebody, if they violate the terms of their probation, they would be eligible for a 10-year prison sentence. Now, that's not nothing. They'd be eligible for a 10-year prison sentence. And in Iowa, I don't know what you get if it's a day off, you know, for every day that you serve, if you don't punch a prison guard or shank an inmate, but it wouldn't be 10 years. It would be closer to 5. Again, not nothing. I would have preferred to have seen, let's say, a year of that applied up front. We're going to put you on probation. You're young enough. We hope you can turn your life around. You made a mistake. There are consequences for this mistake. And just to ensure that you understand the consequences here, we're going to give you a little taste of what awaits you if you violate the terms of your probation once you get out from behind bars. So we'll stay most of your sentence. You're still going to do a year. I think that would have been much more appropriate than what was handed down to Gerald Vance of Cedar Rapids, Iowa. I hope he stays on the straight and narrow, but I'm not sure that he's really been incentivized to do so after his experience in the criminal justice system. All right, today's Armed Citizen story from Michigan. Hazel Park after prom shooting suspect appears to have fired in self-defense. This is, you know, we've seen a number of these types of shootings. Airbnb, somebody rents out, a house. There's a huge party. You know, if you're lucky, you're just left with like property damage, right? I don't know how these Airbnb owners make any money off of these things, because I can only imagine that the place gets trashed after every one of these parties. But in this case, there was a house, not a big mansion either, by the way, just a regular old house, looked kind of like a starter home, in Hazel Park, Michigan, that was being used as a short-term rental. Somebody rented it for an after-prom party. Bunch of people show up. This was last Friday, I believe. I think it was last Friday. There were a bunch of people, it sounds like, who were not in high school who showed up for this party, which is one of the problems when you rent a house that doesn't belong to you and you just open the doors and say, come on in. You probably don't know everybody who's going to show up. So at one point during this party, there was a robbery, apparently. When police arrived, they found a 20-year-old man from Detroit who was shot. He was taken to a local hospital where he was pronounced dead. There was a 19-year-old woman from Pontiac, Michigan, who suffered a non-life-threatening injury in the incident. I'm not sure if this was as a result of a gunshot or if she, you know, tripped and hurt her ankle as she was trying to flee the home. The 21-year-old who was taken into custody after the shooting has now been released. The 21-year-old claims that he fired in self-defense. There are witnesses who back up that account, saying that the 21-year-old, who does have his concealed carry license in Michigan, did lawfully possess that firearm, was the victim of a robbery. According to the Detroit News, evidence indicates that the man was shot after he pointed a gun at someone at the party and stole their watch. The person who fired the gun again had a valid permit to carry a firearm, told police that they fired in self-defense after witnessing the robbery. So police say the investigation is still ongoing. But at this point, again, all evidence points to this being a lawful act of self-defense. You can argue, should you put yourself in a situation like that where you're going to be going to a huge party after hours? You don't know who's going to be there. Frankly, listen, I'm long past the age of showing up at random parties, but I've seen enough of these stories where, things go wrong, that my kids, who are 21, if they told me, hey, Dad, I heard about this party online, thinking about going by for a couple of hours, I would caution them not to. I mean, they're adults, they can make their own decision, but I would tell them, I think it's a really stupid idea for you to do that, because we've seen enough of these incidents where things do go wrong, unfortunately. And in this case, the robbery took place. That robber was shot and killed. I'm sure this was a traumatic event for everybody there at the party, but if this individual really was acting in self-defense in defense of others, I'm glad they're not facing charges. Finally today, our good deed of the day, in the right place at the right time, willing and able to do the right thing, also from the Detroit area, where a priest becomes a crime-fighting good Samaritan and tackles a car thief suspect. Not just tackles him, but a couple of punches as well, according to the good father. This was, it was Monday evening. Reverend Canon Jean-Baptiste Comin, he's from France. He was in his church parking lot on Monday night when he heard tires squeal and he heard a large crash. So he said he ran over, saw a young man running from the scene with only one shoe on. He was in his clerical attire at the time. Cummins was, not the car thief. And he thought to himself, okay, this doesn't look right. So he runs over, tackles the guy. Another parishioner who was there tackled him as well and held him down until the police arrived. The 18-year-old suspect was arrested. Three others were detained. It's believed that the vehicle that they had been in, that they then crashed, was stolen at the time. Police tried to initiate a traffic stop. That's when the suspect took off, ended up crashing into another car. The woman in that vehicle was injured, but thankfully not seriously. The good father says, I grabbed him and put him down. He said he was resisting a lot, trying to run away, definitely. So I had to, unfortunately, give him a few punches, and I hurt my hand a little bit. Nothing major. But making sure that there was no threat, since I didn't know if he had a gun, if he had a weapon. He said, it was definitely suspicious behavior, probably guilty of the accident. He said once the suspect was down on the ground, he said he turned his attention to the woman who had been hurt in the car crash. He said, I rushed back to the lady to make sure, if she needed the anointing of the sick or a blessing or something. He said, so I was there too with the medics, and she was not very responsive, but her eyes were twitching a little bit. So it sounds like even though these were, non-life-threatening injuries, they were still pretty serious injuries, at least at the time. Afterwards, Fox 2 asked the father, what'd you do later? Like, after things had settled down, just go back to normal life? He said, yeah. He said, I went, I had to do my prayers as usual. I had dinner with the community. And he said, wow, just another day in Detroit. So I guess just another day in Detroit. Things, crime stats are much improved or where they were just a couple of years ago. But still, I guess, plenty of opportunities for crime-fighting priests to step in and save the day when needed. So in the right place, at the right time, willing and able to do the right thing, Reverend Colonel Jean-Baptiste Comin, well, we thank you for your very, very good deed. All right. That's about all the time we have for you on this edition of Bearing Arms, Cam & Company. It is time to bid you a fond adieu, au revoir, But we will be back tomorrow with more of the latest Second Amendment news and information. And of course, you can find the latest Second Amendment news and information each and every day at BarryandArms.com. We are keeping you up to date on the legislation, the litigation, the regulations, the culture war attacks on the right to keep and bear arms. It's all right there waiting for you. Be sure to check it out. If you like what you see, we'd also encourage you to become a VIP, VIP Gold, or VIP Platinum member. You'll get some great benefits no matter what tier of support you choose. And no matter what tier you choose, you'll be supporting the work we're doing at Barry and Arms. And I want to thank you for that very much. Now, if you are a VIP Gold and Platinum member, you get some cool benefits, not just at town, or not just at Barry and Arms, but across the Town Hall, a family of websites. So, you know, townhall.com, Red State, Twitchy, PJ Media, Hot Air. One of those benefits, every Wednesday, Hot Air's at Morrissey and I do a live chat, 1:30 Eastern, with our VIP Gold and Platinum members. You can catch it on the replay if you can't make it live, but we'd have a great time talking with the folks live, and it's whatever you want to talk about. I'm sure we'll be getting some questions about the Supreme Court and the gun cases that have been pending in conference time and time again for months now. But it's not always segment related. It really is just, you know, what people want to talk about. Ed usually throws out a old movie reference or two. I'll make some pithy comments as well, but would love for you to be a part of that. And you can get 60% off your VIP, VIP Gold, or VIP Platinum membership when you go to BarryandArms.com/subscribe and you use the promo code FIGHT, F-I-G-H-T. So hope you'll take advantage of that as well. Enjoy the rest of your hump day Wednesday. The weekend is in sight. We'll see you back here tomorrow with another edition of Barry and Arms Cam and Company. But until then, be well, be safe, and be free.